Okay, we'll bring to order the meeting of the Public Safety and Security Policy and Finance Committee. Let's start out with a roll call.
Representative Cornish.
Here.
Representative Johnson.
Here.
Representative Hillstrom.
Here.
Representative Becker Finn.
Here.
Representative Considine. Representative Dean.
Here.
Representative Frankie.
Here.
Representative Gossel.
Here.
Representative Howe.
Present.
Representative Blomer. Representative Lucero.
Here.
Representative Neuberger. Representative O'Neill.
Oh, I'm here.
Representative Pinto. Representative Ward.
Here.
Representative Zerwas.
Okay, I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes for March 14th.
So moved.
Was it?
That was me being.
Oh, my hearing. The left side isn't good. Representative Dean moves the minutes of March 14th. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. I guess we'll go. Is Representative Crescia here? If not, we'll move with Representative Lunan. House File 1443. And the chair will move House File 1443 to be referred to the General Register. Representative Lunan, go ahead and introduce yourself and begin.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for hearing the bill. House File 1443 does several things. First of all, it allows insurance companies to seek reimbursement in civil court for investigative costs when they've caught and someone's been convicted of committing fraud. And so it's just going to add to the factor that fraud will not pay. Another thing it does is it will protect the identity of mandatory recorded reporters of insurance fraud, and also removes some of the, because of redundancy, removes some of the reporting requirements of insurance companies when they are fined in another state. And the reason for that is all of that data is already on the National Association of Insurance Commissioners site. They can already get it there, and the Commerce Department actually was the one that asked to have that put in. And it allows, finally, for licensed police officers that are employed by the Commerce Department to serve warrants and free the Commerce Department up from having to write up a local peace officer to do that. I'll answer any questions.
Okay. Questions, members? Seeing none. Any questions from the public? Also none. Any closing remarks?
Where is this going to, Mr. Chair?
This is going to the floor.
Good. All right. Well, I appreciate your support. See you there.
Chair, will renew the motion. House File 1443 be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you, Representative Lunan. House File 2068, Representative Daniels. Oh, Representative O'Neill. We've got a couple of bills coming up. Go ahead. That have to do with anti-terrorism. I just wanted to make sure that it's the chair's intention to keep the bills as anti-terrorism bill. There's been some move in the past to take this name out and put some fancy language in it, but there was the intent of the bill when it says an anti-terrorism bill, that is the intention. So, with that, Representative O'Neill, go ahead with your bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And so since my brother is out sick today, I'm going to present the bill. So this is a new one for me. I've never had to do that for him. But he appreciate your prayers because he's not doing well. So to the bill. So this is an extension of a grant. It's a $250,000 grant. The grant's already in place right now, but it runs out in June. And it is to combat some terrorism. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to my testifier to let you know what they've done with previous grant money and what they intend to do with the grant money that if they were allotted more.
Thank you, Representative.
You could, give your name and title and begin, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Andy Boland, and I am the Faribault Police Chief. I appreciate your time this morning. I was asked by Representative Daniels to come and discuss this because we were one of two communities that was awarded this grant last year. Our grant funding runs out in June.
To give you some brief background on this grant, I was told initially that five agencies started the grant process in last year. A couple of them dropped out because they couldn't meet the deadline. One particular one we understood did not meet the criteria, and the grant was awarded to Faribault through our community partners and Hennepin County through their community partners. So with that, the $250,000 was kind of split. I'll give you a brief overview of what the city of Faribault has done with that money. We partnered with what's called the Faribault Diversity Coalition. It was an existing community group that was very active. They use on the majority of the money for events for our Somali youth. It's obviously diverse across the city. It's not just targeting Somali, but we understand the aim of the bill is to make sure we build community relations and trust. It's been a good program for us. I've got a Somali officer that's been very active with this grant. He's makes regular daily visits to the mosque when he's working there, working with the elders. We've got a great relationship with our Somali community in the city of Faribault. The grant has been used in the majority for getting kids together for events where officers, whether they're playing basketball, doing a ropes course at Shattuck St. Mary's, playing soccer, they put events together where they bring kids to the Twins games, United Soccer games. While these things are going on, they've also used some of the funding for English as a second language. We believe in law enforcement and with our community partners that's important that the adults of these youth understand English so they know what their kids are up to and they can have a relationship and understand what they're doing in English. The grant has been successful for us. It runs through June of this year. I can tell you that our population in our city is about 11 to 15% Somali. When this grant first came out, respectfully with the chair, there was some heat that we took because of the name of the bill. Obviously, whatever the committee wants to pursue, that's fine. I did get a call this morning from a Minneapolis police sergeant who also said there's some concern about the name of the bill. My opinion on it, it does the same thing, whatever we call it. It's building connections with these youth, so they trust law enforcement. We've got a positive relationship. Ultimately, I think that the work that we've done, at least in our community with this grant, has been very positive. We've got a great relationship with our mosque leaders and elders. The mosque director last Friday just brought our department a whole big batch of fresh sambusa for our officers that wolfed it down like in a couple minutes. That hasn't always happened. They did that because they appreciate the extra patrol we're given, the good relationships we have with our Somali community, and the network that we've made with these kids on these every week events. We hope the funding continues. It's been very positive in the city of Faribault. Even the people that were naysayers initially have now come to say, you know what, we understand the benefits of this. It's not a spy program. It's a way to build relationships. So ultimately, as the chief law enforcement in my community, if something's going on in the Somali community, whether it's local criminal activity or some outside influence, we want to have a relationship so these folks feel trusting and contact us and share that with us because ultimately we have the same goal, keeping our kids safe.
And, Chief, I agree with you. We don't want to target any group specifically when we do these things, but the whole reason these grants were brought about in the last couple of years was to fight terrorism. Now, how we do that in the number of programs of outreach is fine with me, I think, and it's a good idea. So, Representative Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to testify, Chief, you know, this is great that it worked and it built those relationships and it's got that all going. I guess now that you've got that going, what would stop if you didn't have the money? Would you just stop and cut those relationships or would they continue? So I guess what effect would happen if you didn't have that money and what events would not take place once you now that you've got that all established?
We're going to continue to do these kinds of things, sir. We're going to continue our programs even if we don't have the funding. But the reality is if the money's earmarked, what it has done is given our ability to have the adults at English as a second language, which I think is important if we're trying to understand what we're trying to deal with here. We can't, you know, law enforcement is not going to pay for English as a second language. That's where the bulk of the funds go. The reality is my department only gets about my city probably gets $20,000 to $25,000, much of which is officer overtime for these events. So either way, it's not going to affect my budget. We have a good relationship. We had a good relationship before this started. We're going to continue some programs and outreach. We're active in the EID celebrations. We're active anytime there's gatherings with our diverse groups in our city. That's not going to change. What will happen is you'll lose funding for an organization like the Faribault Diversity Coalition that's put a lot of money into English as a second language, which I think even in law enforcement we all agree, that's kind of an important component to assimilation and understanding what our kids are doing.
Representative Hall? Representative Hall, I share some of his concerns. I support the bill. It's just that how far are we going to take this into the outreach and what programs are going to qualify and what do they have to do with the original intent? So far, I think we've given a lot of flexibility on the types of programs that are described. So, Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier. Thank you for your work on this, and it is relationships that are going to make all the difference. So I have a couple of questions, though. One is that ESL is generally taught, adult English language skills are taught through community ed, through the education department. So I'm wondering what is happening in your community in that regard, because that would be a way to continue that. The other question that I have is about my background in relationship building and that sort of thing says that what you're doing is the right thing. But is there any data to show that this is the best way to do this, to build these relationships? Are there other alternatives? Is there anybody keeping track of these things so that we're knowing that the money is actually going where it should be?
Chief Boland?
Yes, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. We do track it, obviously, through the OJP grant on what's being spent. Again, the large majority of the money is being spent with our community partner that deals with all the diverse groups in town. As far as if we're tracking, if we're having an effect, the reality is we've got a good relationship with our Somali community. I know as a police chief, if I'm looking for somebody who's committed a violent crime in our Somali community, I feel that I can contact our mosque director, who's a friend of mine, and the elders that we've worked with to say, you know what, this is who we want to have a conversation with as law enforcement. I think those relationships take time to build up. With the Somali community in general, it's difficult when a lot of our immigrant population is coming from refugee camps where law enforcement's not looked at very favorably. So for us to have any kind of positive spin, to be able to work with these kids, whether it's playing basketball or just talking to them where they live, it's been a good relationship. We're not going to stop that, whether there's grant funding or not. The ESL thing, the thing that's unique about it is they're taking the parents of these kids to learn English while we're spending time with the youth with other activities. So it's been a good combination. So if it continues, we will continue to apply for it. But going back to the other question, if it doesn't continue, we're not going to stop our relationships with our Somali community. They're good, and we hope to keep them strong.
Just
go ahead, Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is there any data collection? Any data collection and analysis on numbers of incidents, numbers of engagements, positive and negative, anything that you're tracking to evaluate?
Yes, ma'am. Through our quarterly reports into OJP, we're tracking how many adults are at ESL, how many kids we're meeting. In general, we're meeting between 20 and 40 kids every Friday night at our basketball court. I mean, we're buying shoes for them. We're partnering with other community grants to get shoes. I mean, so we keep track of the numbers. It's been successful. Our population is, again, probably 11 to 15% estimate for Somali population in my community. I know we've made connections with, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people in the last 8 months. So it seems to be viewed very positively. Again, going back to the name, it was a bit divisive, I think, across the state of Minnesota. I took a little heat at a community roundtable. But I think, ultimately, people have seen the benefit of just building relationships. So we have that data also through OJP.
Okay, we've got Representative Considine and Grosselin Pinto, and we have another testifier to bring up here yet. Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Never tell the chair that you're going to do it anyway, even if you don't get the funds. I've heard him too often go, well, go ahead. I'm glad to hear you're behind this one. It sounds like you've got a great program and are doing exactly what this money was intended for. And I believe it's the right place to go for money. When I was on the city council in Mankato, the Minnesota Council on Churches has a tapestry program that has been very active in the immigrant populations. And the one thing that we consistently heard was something that you mentioned, was from their countries and the refugee camps, they're scared to death of the police. And we were lucky that quite a few police officers participated in the tapestry program, and this was just an amazing experience for them to look at the police as their friends and that they are public servants. It almost brought tears to my eyes when one after another of them got up, and that would be the first thing they would talk about, was building relationships with the police that they had never had before. You're doing great work. Representative O'Neill, Representative Daniels be open to the idea of maybe just changing the name to Building Good Citizens grant or Solid American Citizens or something along those lines as the title rather than anti-terrorism.
Now, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Considine. So I really shouldn't speak for my brother, but I think that would be really up to the committee and the chair to decide what to name it. And I think he stated that at the beginning what his intentions were.
Okay, Representative Grossel, and then Representative Pinto, and then I'd like to bring Julianne Ortman up from the county.
Okay, this is for the chief there. In respect to anti-terrorism recruitment into these terrorist organizations, how successful has this program been in stopping this? And has there been any cooperation from these communities in preventing this type of recruitment?
Chief Farm.
Sir, I can't give you a specific data on what we may have stopped. I can tell you that I have had private conversations with our MAS director laying out rules and talking about how we don't want people recruiting our youth in our community. He's on the same page, and as a matter of fact, he's got a kind of a written guideline posted in the mosque that says this is what we do not want to see in these walls, which has to do with recruitment and terrorism. So to me, that's a positive message. What we've prevented, I don't know that I can speak today on that. I know my Somali officer that spends regular daily visits at the mosque with the folks at the mosque is in conversation with them about things that are going on in our community. Are there people that we're concerned about? Are there people that are talking to our youth? I know he has had those conversations.
Okay, Representative Goffel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It'd be nice to see something, if you do have anything like that, it'd be nice to see if we are having an effect on this type of activity, because if we're going to keep pouring money into things, I'm all about making sure that we have good relationship with the community, being a former law enforcement officer myself. But we still have a job to do, and I would like to see that this is having an effect on that. It's all well and good to say this is what we don't want to see in these walls, but is that is it having an effect? That's, I guess, the bottom line is we got to do that.
For the committee's information on in the crowd, we a lot of these grants that we're hearing doesn't necessarily mean you're going to go to the city or the county that's presenting them. These will be competitive grants through the Office of Justice Programs. And Representative Ward, it might be another place to get some information because they have to put detailed applications in for these grants with information on the past thing. And since they're competitive, some of them are turned down due to the lack of information on there. So it would be another spot for you maybe to check out. So. And Representative Pinto, and then we'll bring Ms. Ortman up.
And, Mr. Chair, that was actually what I was going to ask about, was the competitive, kind of how the grants would be awarded. So that was helpful. So I think I'm fine for now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Ms. Julianne Ortman in the crowd. Welcome. If you want to give your name and title and begin, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's an honor to be here in a House committee. My name is Julianne Ortman. I serve as Chief of Staff in the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office. I work with Sheriff Rich Sanek. And a couple of years ago, I wrote a grant for the appropriation by the legislature to DPS for this funding. and we were funded. I've been directing our community engagement team activities since 2015. The community engagement team in the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office was formed in 2011 following some of the recruitment from Al-Shabaab in Somalia. But our community engagement team is much broader than outreach to one community, and these threats are not about one ethnic group. The threat of violence or extremism is not about one religious group or ethnic group, as I've said. So we have had a very broad outreach effort. We have as many as 11 people in our agency that engage through our community engagement team, from the sheriff at the very top all the way to civilian liaisons, sworn officers, and then some leaders in the agency in the management capacity and supervisory. In 2000, and I think it was 16, I wrote this grant to supplement what we do. We would not be doing the programming that we do without this funding. What we did is we applied for a grant for what we call the Women for Peace workshops. We came to realize that moms don't want their children to engage in drugs. They don't want them to get involved in violence. They don't want their kids involved in terrorism. They don't want them joining gangs. And we came to realize that moms in the communities are really good allies for public safety. So as a result, we partnered with the Voice of East African Women with the funds available in this grant. I believe the director is here and will testify to you later about her program. But as a result of this grant, we partnered with Voice of East African Women. We hired a contractor who was a Somali refugee. We partnered with the community organization to reach additional clientele that we would never have otherwise reached as a law enforcement agency. We have our contacts. We all know who we work with regularly. But we wanted to reach deeper into the community and find folks that really needed to learn more about being members of a county, members of being new Americans, what that means. And so we tried to identify as many as 40 women that could come to workshops in Minneapolis, a two-day workshop. What happened was we ended up with 93 women that came to our workshop just last month. They came for 2 days. We had a social services panel that taught about what Hennepin County services might have available for folks. We had a law enforcement panel. The U.S. attorney was there. The FBI representative, Sheriff Stanek, was there. We had a very important speaker named Deka Hassan. She is part of what's called the Parents for Peace organization. Deka is the mother of one of the recently convicted would-be terrorists from our federal courts. She came to speak to the other mothers and the other women in her community about her experience and what happened in her family. We had internet safety presentations, and then on the side we had child care available for children up to age 10, and we had a youth summit for the kids 11 to 18. We brought in our explorers. We brought in police officers. They learned about internet safety. We all talked about what happens on a smartphone and about recruiting from overseas. So we talked about the things that I think really need to be discussed, and as I've said, we could not have done this programming without the grant that was available to us through DPS and OJP. We're very pleased with the result. We have done evaluations. The women participated in developing evaluations. With the funding available, we are repeating the program in Eden Prairie in May. So we'll do an additional set of two-day workshops structured just on the same curriculum, and we'll do them out in Eden Prairie. But the funding ends in June. I think there is a huge demand for this information. We conducted these workshops completely in Somali. We had English translators for people like me. And we really tried to help acclimate folks and help them understand what it means to be here in the United States and to be influential in their families and to be partners with public safety.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from the members? And Chief Bullen and Sheriff Stanek, we thank you both for your participation and your work in this. No questions, any public testimony? Okay, any closing remarks, Representative O'Neill?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I thank you for continuing to hear this bill, even though my Representative Daniels, my brother, was sick, and so I really hope that you do fund this and move it forward. I thank you for your support.
Thank you very much, Representative O'Neill. And with that, we'll lay House File 2068 over for possible inclusion. Representative Krisha, House File 1702. Okay, Representative Krisha, the chair will move your bill, House File 1702, to be referred to the General Register. Go ahead, Representative Krisha, however you would choose.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. A couple of you have heard this bill. The bill in and of itself is just a bill change for notice and waiver requirements for children over the age of 10 or who turn 10 in the juvenile court proceedings. So that we make sure that they have access to legal counsel. I'm going to leave it at that. You're going to hear a pretty compelling story in a second. And before we go into that story, there's lots of little things that come up in life. And one of the things, a number of bills that I've carried lately, you get a chance to hear about different normals. And I was standing in the back of the room just 2 seconds ago, and my testifier here, who has way more courage than I do, put her head on her grandmother's shoulder. And I'm going to leave it at that. And I'm going to let you go into your testify, because that's as far as I can go.
Okay, if you'd like to introduce yourself and begin. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is McKenna. I would like to talk about my life with you today and why it is so important to me that foster kids have an attorney available to them. See, us kids have opinions. It is our lives that are being neglected and abused. At least that's how it was for us. I am one of 5 kids in my family and the second oldest. I am 12 years old and I have been in the system for as long as I can remember. My grandma told me there were 17 cases on us since 2006, and 11 of them were in Swift County within 4 years when my dad had us. My parents were mentally sick and drug addicts. My mom was unable to take care of us and left us 6 years ago. The court ordered her not to see us until we are 18, but that is very hard for us. My dad tried to take care of us but failed horribly. When we took care of us, we were starved and he physically and mentally abused us. He gave us nasty clothing. I even had to scrape dog doo-doo off our clothing so that we would have something to wear for school. I would find whatever I could to help feed my sisters and brother. A restaurant down the street knew our situation and helped us eat at least one time a week. And we would sneak canned goods from my dad and bring them up to our rooms and open them with butcher knives. Social workers and our guardian ad litem never listened to us. We always were sent back to live with him. I was never informed before I met my grandparents that I was allowed an attorney or that someone could have been there to listen to me. One thing that is also important for people like yourselves to know is that I and my brother and sisters were too afraid to speak up in front of him. We knew if we did, he would hurt us. Never, ever let a child be interviewed in front of their parents. See, in April 2014, on my brother's 11th birthday, we met our grandfather and fiancé for the first time. Meeting Grandpa and Grandma Kathy was good because in September we were once taken out of the home, again taken out of the home, and put into foster care. My Grandpa and Grandma Kathy went to court to help us. They became our foster parents after 6 months of being with other foster parents. They fought hard for us so that we could have a good future. During our stay with our grandparents, we had to visit Dad at his house when we didn't want to, even for a week at a time, and it was horrible. I remember he even yelled at us about a missing brush that he had lost and blamed us for it. He punched and hit me and my siblings many times. We were fed maggot cookies, where he yelled at, ate on the floor with a box for a table, with our dog's doo-doo on the floor. The social workers would come and tell him to feed us because he wouldn't unless we told him to. They told him to. We had to see my dad naked. We survived this too because we were used to it. They still wanted to send us home even after the maggot cookies and yelling in the gross, dirty house. I kept wondering why would they send us back. My grandma and grandpa asked our guardian ad litem, social worker, and county attorney for an attorney for us, but they didn't listen. I asked for one after I was explained by my grandparents what one was and what they would do for me, and was not granted one until, well, what really saved us was that my brother and sisters and I wrote a letter to the judge telling him all we have been through and what we wanted. We were finally appointed an attorney. Things changed then. They finally listened. I have been punched, starved, and neglected, and I don't want anyone else to go through what we did. I think the laws need to change. The people that make the laws like yourselves need to hear us kids who are the ones who are going through this stuff. So please talk to kids like me and ask them what they need. I wish I could have had parents that could have been normal, but they weren't. And so for us, the best thing in the whole world was to have a new home to go to, which our attorney helped us get. My grandma and grandpa saved our lives. But what about all those other kids that have no one to help them and listen to them? Who should tell them they are allowed an attorney? Kids don't know this and might be too scared to ask. If kids are allowed an attorney, someone should tell them about that. One more thing. The court had ordered us that we had to see our dad 8 hours a month, but we refused to go, which has worked out because he has not contacted us since. I have nothing to say to him. And no child should be forced to spend time with a parent that had abused them. So to sum things up, please pass this law to help all kids have a voice. We are young, but we are also smarter than you think. Save other kids' futures. Inform them they have a voice and give them the tools to help. Give them an attorney. It's only fair as parents are currently able to get access to an attorney. At least my dad had one. Thank you for your time and listening to me. Your friend, McKenna Ehrenholz.
Thank you very much for what you've been through. You've done an excellent job in testifying and keeping your composure. Thank you very much, ma'am. How would you like to proceed from here, Representative Grisha?
Well, I think we should pass this, and then we should work with Representative O'Neill. We should get some funding. We should do it right. How would you like to proceed, Mr. Chair?
I was referring to your testimony.
Sorry. I do have one more testifier, and we should go to Ms. Pantalova.
Okay, welcome back with your name and title and beginning.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Lilia Pantaleva. I'm the Executive Director of Children's Law Center. Essentially, what we have here today is that in Minnesota, children are allowed an attorney by law. So kids who come into foster care who are removed from home who are 10 years of age or older have a right to legal representation. What we do have is a loophole in the law that doesn't specify who should tell kids that they have a right to an attorney, at what point, when it's done, and how it's done. So what we're trying to do here is fix that. We have identified that the responsible social services agency, which essentially is the social workers that have the initial interaction with children once they are removed from home, should inform these kids that they have a right to legal representation. That should be done fairly quickly, within 14 days of being removed from home or at the emergency protective hearing. As attorney for children, I can tell you that it's absolutely critical for us to get involved very early in the case to understand the situation, because we can actually fix it and prevent many things, including multiple placements, including holding the counties accountable for providing the services that these kids are entitled to. Having an attorney makes a huge difference in the case. Studies have shown that children who have legal representation find permanent homes at a rate of 1.5 times faster, therefore saving the foster care costs by 32%. We have represented kids who otherwise nationally would graduate from high school at a rate of 30%. The kids that we represent graduate from high school at a rate of 75% to 100%, because we believe in them, because we advocate for them, because we fight for them, because we know they have rights, and because actually oftentimes we are that only stable adult in their lives that they don't have otherwise. So with that, I respectfully request your consideration for passing this bill, and happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. McKenna, you are truly an amazing young lady and quite bright. Representative Crenshaw, the social worker and the guardian ad litem in this case, has anybody talked to their supervisor or reported what I would say was dereliction of their duties? Are you aware of that?
Representative Crisha?
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Constantine, I'm not going to go there. I think our social workers are overworked. I think our guardian ad litem are doing the very best they can. We just need to keep putting the pressure on to let them know. What I'm not hearing a dereliction. What I'm hearing is a very stressed situation, a very stressed system. And you will never, ever hear me say that we should come down harder on our social workers. We need to find more resources for them. We need to find more openings in the system. And that's what I'm here for. I mean, in the case of that we hear with Michaela and the many, many other ones, these are good people trying to do the very best they can in difficult situations, and kids that are coming through the pipeline, they just don't have the resources. And that's where I think we have to just keep putting the pressure on from the top. We're going to have to find some funding, and frankly, I should have 134 members signed on to this and Representative O'Neill's bill.
Representative Constantine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I understand what you're saying. My wife's a social worker, though, and we've had the guardian ad litem, and they are charged with having McKenna's best interests. And I also heard during her testimony that she specifically asked for an attorney, and they failed to get it. That I find unacceptable, but, again, I don't have all the issues at hand. But I would like to say one more time, McKenna, you're amazing.
Thank you.
Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, McKenna, for testifying. That was really powerful testimony and is really important, so thank you. Representative Crescia, I think I'm already on Representative O'Neill's bill, very appreciative of you bringing this issue forward. Other folks have come to speak to me about this issue, and it's my understanding that it is going to be expensive to fix this problem, but, you know, we talk a lot about unfunded mandates. This is a right that our children have that they're not getting access to a right that they have under the law. And so just want to emphasize how important this is, and thank you for bringing this to everybody's attention. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hillsburn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing this bill, and thank you for your testimony. You did a great job. Members, the Public Defender's Office are the ones that are charged in the statute with representing children over 10. It is this committee's task to fund the Public Defender's Office. The Guardian Ad Litem's Office is charged. We fund that program here. Currently, there are 240 children in Hennepin County that are mandatory Guardian Ad Litem cases that don't even have a guardian ad litem because there aren't enough, and we haven't funded it enough. So this is a right. This is a right that our children are entitled to under the statute, but it is this committee's job to make certain that the funding is there to make sure that those rights are protected. So I hope that we have the ability to take care of that this year. Thank you, Representative Crescia.
Thank you.
No more questions from members. Any comments from the public? Representative Crescia, any more testimony?
I do not, Mr. Chair. Just final comments on the bill when you're ready.
Oh, that's what I meant to. Anything from you? Go ahead.
Sure. So thank you, Mr. Chair. So my final comments are this. The soundbite is these kids deserve at least one adult voice that they can get out of the situation that they're in. And so that's why I bring this bill up. To Representative Hillstrom's point and Representative O'Neill, yes, we should find a way to fund this. I will not say that this is going to fall lightly on the chair's shoulders. This has got to be something we all push for. This has got to be a priority that comes up from 134 members in 87 counties. The reason I say that, I brought this bill forward, and I've gotten pushback from counties. Their first concern is, how do we handle this? And my answer is, I don't care. Frankly, that's not my problem. Your problem is to take care of this. And so we have got to keep putting pressure on from the top. I understand limited resources. I understand budgets. I also understand priorities.
Okay. With that, the chair will move House File 1702 refer to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Representative Tice, House File 1932. Chair will move House File 1932 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Laid over. Representative Tice, when you are ready, go ahead and introduce yourself and begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1932 is a way for Central Minnesota to continue all the good work that they've been doing regarding sex trafficking in our area. Most people will say, oh, it's not happening in my community, but in our community, it is big time. And I'm relatively new to what's going on, and it's actually just incredible some days, both good and bad. The work has been incredibly wonderful. We've made some great strides, but the fact is how ingrained it is in our community is absolutely incredibly horrible. So with that, I'm just going to turn it over because you're going to hear the rest of the story from these two, and while they figure out who's going first. with me, I have our county attorney, Janelle Kendall, and Wake Park Chief of Police, Dave Bentrud.
Hey, whichever one would you like. All right. Chief, go ahead.
Chief Dave Bentrud, Police Chief in Wake Park. And Chairman Cornish and members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to come back and share a little bit of what's happening in our area. This issue really came to light of trafficking and prostitution in our area about 5 years ago when we had a 14-year-old girl out of the Twin Cities that was being trafficked out of a local motel in my community. And needless to say, that got my attention. And in the 5 years since then, we have been working on this issue through our local investigator work, kind of under a mutual aid situation. We have identified over 150 women over in that time that have been trafficked in our area. We have arrested over 100 Johns for soliciting prostitution. Several of those have been soliciting for sex with minors. We have tried to do some educational programming. We've done what we call a John School, which is trying to reduce the demand. We have been making referrals to victims of trafficking to try to get them out of the lifestyle. And we have been doing this, like I said, more or less part-time in rather informal under local mutual aid. More recently, we've had two investigators, primarily an investigator from my department who is a general investigator, as well as an investigator from St. Cloud PD who is also a school resource officer. So needless to say, they have other cases. Late last year, we, through the Stearns County Attorney's Office, we implemented in a county a high-risk runaway protocol in which juveniles who had run away from home it wasn't just a matter of law enforcement just returning them home, but there was an interview process, and we've developed a form that officers need to go through with these runaways when they are located and when they are returned home. And I think we implemented this about November of last year is when it kind of went countywide. And our investigators following up on those have identified seven juveniles from our area that have been trafficked. They've disclosed being trafficked. Of the seven, one indicated they were up in the Duluth area in a hotel out of Lake Elmo. Another was indicating they were in Fargo and in the Twin Cities. All of them under the age of 18. The youngest was 14. Several of the girls are from the St. Cloud metro area, but we had girls from smaller communities like Bruton and Painesville that were somehow recruited into this lifestyle. So we have started out trying to assess the scope of the problem in central Minnesota, and as we kind of peeled back the layers of the onion, if you will, we have assessed that it is a significant problem. And over the course of the past year, we have been working law enforcement with local prosecutors, Stearns County Attorney's Office, victims advocates to try to develop a response, a multidisciplinary, multi-jurisdictional response that we believe will work in our area to combat this issue. And maybe at Val, I'll turn it over to Janelle and maybe describe the specifics as far as what that team might look like and why it's so critical for us. Thank you.
Ma'am, before you begin, if during your testimony, if you could just touch on whether your task force networks with other task force around the state and shares tactics or ideas or does any networking. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Janelle Kendall, I'm the Prince County Attorney. We learned this from Representative Pinto. Literally, it was his boss, John Choi, that originally told us that we were the largest demand outside the metro area, that St. Cloud was where they were seeing a lot of activity. Literally, Ramsey County was picking up our girls in downtown St. Paul. So that's where we started this, and we are still very much involved in the VIC task force, which I believe was also started out of the Ramsey County Attorney's Office, as well as with the U.S. Attorney's Office. Andy Luger started his career in 1989 prosecuting trafficking cases. So he gets it. He knows what's going on, and because we are the Jacob Wetterling County, we are very, very familiar with working with the feds. As Dave said, the good news and the bad news is we know what we've got. And what we've accomplished so far with 150 prostitutes identified, we're prosecuting the Johns. We're actually hanging convictions on the Johns, which is a little bit something different than you can do outside the metro. And we also then have 8 pimps so far. 27 years was our record on the conviction because these guys are one-man crime waves. They're selling drugs out of one hand and they're selling women out of the other, and this is going on a regular basis. What we could do with this funding in a pilot project in Stearns County is use what we already know. We know we have a problem, but we want to report directly back to this committee. I don't mean having, you know, nice conversations on the side and treatment speak. Let's talk about what's really going on here. Okay, we know how many Johns we have just scratching the surface. This has been shooting fish in a barrel so far. What we need to do is get beyond the obvious things. We know we have 150 women that are being sold in our town right now in every hotel and motel. Now it's out into the apartment buildings. Now it's out into the private dwellings. Now it's out into other places. So we need the resources to find that. But we also know from our expertise in domestic violence, we are a federal mentor court, again, used to working with the feds and with statewide type of organizations. And what we do in domestic violence cases, we send advocates out with the cops. Heard some questions on some other bills here this morning about the idea of people being afraid to talk to the cops. Yeah, the prostitutes are real afraid to talk to the cops. Absolutely they are. And we've been before this committee on one other bill that's before you to take a look at what we should do with that. But what we do is we send sexual assault advocates out with the cops so that she can have a confidential conversation with that advocate and say, what's going to happen to me if I turn on my pimp? Because as Representative Pinto knows, we need these women to testify. This isn't like domestic violence where we can get a really good investigation and rock and roll without a victim. I need her to testify to get a 13-year and a 27-year sentence. So how we're going about that is we're using our expertise in multi-jurisdictional prosecutions and work to send advocates out with the cops, and that's what this funding would allow us to do. We also have a legal aid attorney that works with the victims because from his jail cell, we know in domestic violence cases, he can get her evicted from her house, sell her car, and shut off her cell phone. So all the different ways that she has to get out of this life, it ain't going to happen if we just prosecute him and hope for the best. There's two sides of this. Plus, you've got what's going on with these Johns and actually hanging convictions on them. So what we're looking at is a chance to do a pilot project and report back directly to this committee and say, here's what works, here's what doesn't work, here's the three parts of this that we need to take on, and absolutely, when you get a big nasty one, you said that one to the feds, we have a record of doing that out of Stearns County. But beyond that, what we're seeing from our community is beyond anything I've seen before. The St. Cloud Times did a public forum on this. Over 100 people showed up, including one of the traffickers, who happens to be the only female trafficker that we have charged so far. She's pending sentencing right now, and she came up to say, you know, if somebody had been doing this when I was 12, I wouldn't be where I am today. So these are one-person crime waves. It's a three-faceted part, not only with the traffickers and with the prostitutes, but also with the Johns. And we would like the opportunity, Mr. Chairman, to report back to you on what can be done, literally down to how many hours of investigation are we putting in, who exactly are we sending out there. Again, we have a history in this in the Federal Domestic Violence Mentor Court to collect data
and prove what we're doing. We're not going on hope as an effective management strategy. We would like the funds to be able to really take a crack at what can be done here and then show what can be done in areas both inside the metro but specifically outside the metro.
Ma'am, how well does this track statewide? I got a complaint from one of my sex trafficking task force that these folks are getting a slap on the wrist, and sometimes there's multiple charges involved, not in drugs and other things, weapons. In your experience, are the other charges highlighted in the sex trafficking dropped off, or are serious enough sentences being given to the, or has the judges had a far, opportunity yet to see what's right and what's wrong about the length of the sentence?
You know, right now we're getting better sentences on the trafficking than we are on the drugs. And that's literally where we've cleaned up a number of the drug dealers who are selling drugs over here. That's what they come in with, is the criminal history on the drug crimes, but they're also selling people, and we get better sentences on those. So right now, in Stearns County anyway, we're holding out for that. I think, as Representative Pinto could tell you, people are just starting to kind of get the memo on this. We didn't know until we were told we needed to start looking for this in our community that it was really there. And once we did, the sentences are hefty. The Guidelines Commission has got those ranked up there pretty high. If I can get people to testify, we can do pretty well on those. What we're seeing probably the biggest difference in statewide is what's happening with the Johns. And I think that goes to part of your 87 different counties, what it is that people in our community want to see done. The St. Cloud Times saw fit to put all their pictures in the paper. That probably wouldn't happen everywhere, and that's one of those things that in the process of the pilot project we would report back to you on, is what are the options on that?
It might be a local problem then. Representative Howe, and followed by Representative Dean.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I live in the area, so I'm and actually work day-to-day with Chief Bentrude, so understand the situation quite a bit, but I also know that I guess my question would be is, I also know that there's young boys been involved also, and would this pilot project include that, or are we just going to concentrate on the female end of the trafficking, not on the male end of the trafficking, and how is that all going to be included, I guess would be my question.
Yes, we are aware of, we had one charge recently for soliciting sex with a male. A juvenile male, so absolutely. You know, if it's whether it's a male victim or a female victim, we will go after them with equal zeal if we're able to.
The juveniles are harder to find, and the males are. It's tougher to get those reports. I think you probably heard us talk about here before. A 15-year-old boy who was in the suicide ward at St. Cloud Hospital is how we found out about that one, out of the city of Cold Spring. He had six adult male customers regularly in the city of Cold Spring, and it's just harder for him to report. So that was how it all came out. Absolutely, we're looking for those. They're harder to find.
Representative Powell.
And I think that's the important piece to know here is that that's why I'm in real support of this, because I think that's going to, that kind of a pilot project and that type of information coming back could help us statewide figure out on how to get to the whole problem. And I do believe that the other piece of that is and how I got involved in this in my line of work was tracking down and going to the house where that 14-year-old got tracked to, and so that the hotel piece of this, there's a lot of other pieces of this puzzle that we need to all put together. So thank you.
Okay, we have four people here with questions. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Howe, you are going to shorten my questions, so thank you. So it's called the Central Minnesota Sex Trafficking Task Force. I mean, do you do work outside of Stearns County, or is it specifically within Stearns County? I'm trying to understand exactly the reach of the work that you're doing.
The three officers that are composed are from Wake Park, St. Cloud, and the BCA. Absolutely. We need the statewide jurisdiction because the traffickers don't really care where the county line is and where the city boundaries are. So absolutely. We've already – and then you've gone in to maybe talk about some of the training you've done.
Chief, well, yeah, our investigations have taken us or taken our investigators up into the Morrison County and probably the three county area of Stearns, Benton, and Sherburne. So that's why I'm emphasizing the multi-jurisdictional approach because, again, it's just not isolated to the St. Cloud metro area. The traffickers live in different areas, and we've had cases down into the metro area as well as some of the smaller towns around us. So the multi-jurisdictional piece is really critical for us to be able to effectively address this issue.
Okay, Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and many thanks to the county attorney and the chief for you were before the committee before and pushing this, and then certainly your leadership. This is an issue in central Minnesota, as is the whole state, and you all have just done amazing work. I have just a little bit of concern, I guess, to remind folks on the committee, we last term with the leadership of the chair, we had the first ever state funding to support law enforcement investigations, local investigations, and those were grants that went through Office of Justice Program, so kind of a parallel process from the grants regarding countering extremism that we heard from Faribault earlier, and there were more applicants than there's funding. And so I guess one concern I have, and again, not in any way a knock on the amazing work being done here, but I'm a little bit of a concern just knowing that there is great work done around the state as well. So we had $800,000 last year, and I think $250,000 the fiscal year before that. And so just wondering about your thoughts regarding that, kind of designating particular area versus maybe perhaps beefing up the grants that would go to law enforcement agencies in other parts of the state as well, because there were more agencies who applied than were able to be funded. So any thoughts about that? Again, recognizing, as I say, the great work you all are doing, so not in any way criticizing that.
Chief Bullen.
Well, we've looked at and applied for different grants to try to get this off the ground, and haven't had a lot of success. Some of the federal grants don't really allow for a lot of customization that needs to be. You're kind of restricted as to how you operate under those grants. We've applied for state grants that we did not get, and I guess what I like about what we're trying to do here is I think that we, through over the course of last year, like I said, talking with law enforcement officers, advocates, prosecutors, we have come up with a model that we believe will be effective, and we're very open to being held accountable for performance. But we have developed a plan that we think is somewhat customized to the issues of central Minnesota, but I also believe could be replicated to other parts of the state, greater Minnesota, and I think we can be an example for that. And so I guess I'm, having been through the grant process and swung and missed a few times, if we could get this funded and show the results that we've had, again, working informally, that this is something that could be replicated. We could be a model for other parts of the state, like I said. And I think, to me, that's a better way to go than trying to fit a program into grant parameters that sometimes it's like a square peg in a round hole kind of thing. And I think what we're asking for is what we believe to be an effective model for our area to combat a very serious problem. And so there's some customization in this bill, I guess, that allows us to be more effective.
If I may, it's bang for the buck.
Mr. Kendall.
As you know, there are people across the state who still don't think this is going on. Heck, if you'd asked us 5 years ago, we'd have said, really, in St. Cloud? We're shovel ready. We're going to do this whether we get the funding or not, but if you want to really know what's going on and dig down and report back to you, you can literally tell us what to count. Whereas the chief said the two federal grants right now were too big
because we aren't completely rural. We're kind of that sweet spot and big enough to have some experience and some depth, but small enough to still be able to turn the ship on a dime if we need to. But we recognize that there are a lot of places that just aren't getting this. And when we've been able to call Granite Falls and Baxter and say, hey, we got one of your girls down here. Can we talk about this? We're in a good location to be able to go out from there. And as the chief said, to give you something to work with so that as you do grant funding down the line, you can say, here's what we want you to do and here's how we want you to do it. Give you a little expertise to work off of. And we're willing to report directly back to you. We fear that not. People have said, holy cow, you're going to go straight back to the committee? Yeah, I want to know. What do you want to know? That's what we're for.
Representative Pinto, we've got to get going here, but go ahead.
Okay, I'll be real quick, Mr. Chair. So just Chief and the county attorney as well, I think that what you've described in terms of what you're trying to do, I think fits very much with the grants that have been, with the structure that with the previous sex trafficking grants in terms of being very customized and tried a number of things around the state. In fact, actually, they were kind of pitched as pilot projects that first year. I think the problem is just it sounds like just hasn't been quite enough money because you all are doing amazing work, and I suspect it just sort of didn't quite make the cutoff. So, Mr. Chair, I'll be done then, but just to say it may be that if some of this funding were expanded that pool, that could probably do that. And then because we already have an infrastructure in place that's doing this kind of work around the state, experimenting, trying different things, and getting money out, that might, and reporting back, providing some information back, that might make a lot of sense. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And Representative Ward, but Chief, you don't have to answer that, but just make sure that you do a good job of PRing what you're doing there in the county, because down in southern Minnesota, their task force, every time you turn around, they've got another ad on the TV and KEYC, what they've been doing. And I asked them for some links, and they sent me a whole mess of links to all their TV pieces, radio commercials, everything like this. So that's a good idea to keep that in the forefront. So you get support, and you can put that in with your application. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will be quick. I want to thank you for the data focus and the opportunity to review what's happening so that we can focus the money and be really effective with it. I'm so much in favor of the stakeholder collaboration that you've described. I have two other potential stakeholders that you haven't mentioned, and I'm assuming that you are incorporating them somehow. One would be the school districts, yep. Counselors, teachers, having that communication relationship, because I think that they are in position often to know that something is going on in an earlier stage. Kids having trouble, whatever, so that might help a little bit. The other is, you mentioned several of the counties, but Stevens County, I'm wondering about the tribal reservations, because I know that there are problems as people are moving around the state. So those were just two other colleagues that I think would be really helpful to you for you to incorporate in that. Thanks.
Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, Representative Ward stole my question. I was also going to emphasize, I think, in order to address these issues, they're really pervasive in the community, and was just wondering about what type of outreach and bringing in kind of more of the community. And then to that, I think the progress we've been able to make on sex trafficking in the last several years, I think, partially is in the way that, we've kind of enlightened way of viewing the problem. And I just wanted to point out that, most of these people who are being trafficked these people are victims. So when we talk about, a lifestyle, they're victims. And also wanted to point out, especially with the juvenile victims, these aren't that they're having sex with somebody for money. It's they're being taken advantage of by criminals. And so I think that the way we talk about that is really important, because it isn't having sex with a 14-year-old. That's not possible. Mm-hmm. It's assault. And I know that you know how important that is. I just think that the way we talk about it is important, as we're trying to get more of the community engaged in what we're trying to accomplish. So if you could talk a little bit about bringing other folks from the community, kind of bring it to their attention as well.
We've got 30 people at the table every time we meet. The schools are there.
Catholic Charities is there. Our homeless outreach is a key part of this. We have two social workers who do nothing but work the streets in St. Cloud with those persons. We've already been out to all the mandated reporters in District 742 because very commonly these people will self-identify but not want to report, not want to talk to people like us. We get that. Legal Aid is there. The regional navigator, obviously, is also there. But not only the shelters and the homeless and the schools, I just cannot believe the amount of people that have jumped in telling us, we're seeing this, we're seeing this. Thank you for finally naming it and saying it out loud.
Yeah. Centric Care has representation there. So this is a very broad. We have C.C. Trelaw is trying to raise money privately for a safe house for women. I mean, it's a really broad-based, multidisciplinary group. I probably understated that when I during my comments, but it's one of the more rewarding work groups that I've been a part of in my career.
Okay. Representative Grossel should be our last question. Representative Grossel.
Okay. First, I thank you for doing this work. It's work that needs to be done. And these are some tough cases, I'd imagine, from time to time. Representative Finn brought a very good point forward there that a lot of these are child victims of the sexual assault. So this is for either the chief or county attorney here, that you haven't any problems with prosecution of these cases and with sentences. Are you getting good sentences on these?
Yes, absolutely. As I answered the chair's question, it's getting people to testify. And it's victims who are willing to identify, because getting to those kids, they're harder to find because mm-hmm. they don't just jump out at you. As this young lady who testified right before us, and that's what we're dealing with, they're not in a position to speak up for themselves and to get out. When they do, the sentences are, quite frankly, very good.
Okay.
It's a matter of being able to get a proof beyond a reasonable doubt case in front of a jury. My taxpayers got no time for this. We've tried four of the Johns so far. They've got no time for that either. So we're getting convictions on all of those without any problem as well.
Now you talk about stiff sentences. Give me an example, please.
27 years, 13 years, 18 years. Okay. Not 18, 8. 27 is our record so far. He's got the record. He's got a 40.
second highest now.
Yeah, years with an S, but that's because they have criminal history scores. Mm-hmm. Right out of the chute, coming in without a criminal history score, I think is a 48-month commit, but that's not who we're catching when we're doing this with the resources we have now. We're dealing with the people who have criminal histories, and then we get a nice, healthy chunk off the top of that.
Representative Grossel, any follow-up?
Again, for first-timers, it's been 48 months commit.
I think it is. We haven't had one. We haven't had one that comes to us without a felony criminal history score so far.
Okay. All right. Just wanted to see what kind of so prosecutors and judges are willing to go after these types of crimes then.
We are.
Good. Okay. Good. Thank you.
Any more questions? Any questions from the public? If none, any closing comments, Representative Tyson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate your support.
Okay, with that, the chair will move House File 1932, a layover for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much for both of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Clark, House File 2017. Representative Clark, House File 2017. The chair will move for layover for possible inclusion. Before I have you do your amendment, which we'll do because we usually do the amendment to get it in the proper form the author would like it, but I just want to ask you, do you really want it in that form, because the chair does not like the amendment, and so it's up to you how to proceed. Proceed at your own risk. I don't like the law enforcement piece being taken out, and then I would like you to explain what Islamophobia is in detail and why you have that inserted, if you could.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask you to move the amendment. I'm happy to answer those questions.
Would you like to adopt the amendment? Or?
Yes, please.
Okay, the chair will move the A2 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The motion carried.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I'm really pleased, members, to bring this bill before you. Some of the testimony you heard earlier about the success with, in my own county, in Hennepin County, with the work that's been done to deal with intervention with youth who are being recruited either into violent gangs, sometimes into terrorist type of activity, all of those kinds of things, is due to the organization that is being funded in this bill. You heard a lot of information about the women who have hundreds of women have come to the meetings with our county, and they were brought there by this woman who you're going to hear from in a moment, Fahia Khalif, who is the executive director of the Voice of East African Women. And Mr. Chairman, if I might just answer your concern briefly about the amendment, because I think you will see why it makes the bill stronger. One of the things in talking with members of the community about the existing bill, I heard earlier when we were sitting here, people were discussing the fact that some of the titles or the ways that images that are put forward in trying to deal with these kinds of issues may raise concerns within the particularly East African community. They feel they're being named or stigmatized in some way. And so the language that we put here is to try to deal with some of that. And we realized that we also left out the word gangs. So gangs needed to be put in. The other part, you asked about the issue of Islamophobia. That is really addressing a concern that the people in the community have, that they are sometimes being recruited, and the dynamic that's going forward is based on fear or loathing of the Islam religion, of people whose that's their faith. And so we wanted to put that in there to make that clear that is a dynamic that's out there. The next part is establishing a youth advisory council. In the amendment, in talking again with feedback, one of the things I like to do with bills is to try to get feedback from the community who are most impacted. It's really clear that youth need to be involved in a way where they're really providing guidance to this kind of work. It just can't be done by adults. The fathers of one of the young men who is actually in prison because he was vulnerable to this talked with me and just said, you know, we have to have our youth be leaders in this because they won't listen to us adults so much. We got to have the youth talking to each other. So that is why that was put in there. And then the last part, we deleted the wide open funding. Mr. Chairman, I talked with you about that as we were walking down the stairs the other day, that I wanted details on how that would be, how that part would be developed before it was left in. And I'm happy to say that in a conversation I had this morning with the deputy sheriff of Hennepin County, he agreed that the independent bill that Representative Daniels has fits that this part fits well in there, and I support that. I want to support them in getting their funding for that, so I'll look and be talking with you more about that if you'd like. Anyway, the most important part of this whole bill is not this amendment. It's what the bill is about, and I want to turn this over to Fahia Khalif, again, the executive director of the Voice of East African Women, and let her talk with you about the incredible work that they have been doing and the success that they've been helping bring to this effort.
Ma'am, if you introduce yourself and begin, thank you for coming.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. My name is Fahia Khalif. I am the executive director of Voice of East African Women. And the reason I'm here today is to ask for your support. Like Representative Clark mentioned, and I really want to say thank you, Representative, for your support and hearing our voice and always kind of stepping up and supporting us. I just want to go ahead and straight in and to tell you that Voice of East African Women last 4 years has been working with the law enforcement. That included Hennepin County Sheriff, police departments, both Ramsey County, Hennepin County, Anoka County, all the counties. Back in 2014, before I even knew about what it means for law enforcement in the Somali community, I started doing what they call Mothers Against Youth Recruitment. I had my first town hall meeting was back in October 2014. I did not know who was going to show up. I had a tremendous turnout. I have all the law enforcement, I mean all seven counties showed up. And this was the need. This was what the mothers wanted to talk about it. And we didn't know who was recruited and where was being recruited. Moving forward, not knowing the mothers and not speaking what's going on in their own houses, we learned so much is happening, but moving forward, back in 2015, when the rumors came in the community where a lot of Somali youth was being recruited, ISIS, Al-Shabaab, We thought it was a joke because nobody wanted to talk about. Mothers was, I would say, in denial because they thought this was the law enforcement trying to trap the mothers and the community. I myself, as a mother of two boys, I didn't know nothing about it. So talking to the mothers, talking to the law enforcement, partnering with U.S. Attorney's Office, Andy Lugar, I learned a lot. I started talking to the mothers, and I started asking the questions about who's really recruiting your children. Is this truth? Do you know anything about ISIS? Do you know anything of Shabbat? Do you know anybody's reaching out there? Everybody will say, no, that's not true. The FBI is out here to kidnap children. And 2016, as you're all aware of it, 10 Somali young boys was picked up and put in prison because they were being recruited. Mothers was scared. They didn't know what to do. And as we held many meetings, like I said before, and all these workshops, mothers are free to come forward and talk about it. And at some point, back in August 25th, one of the workshops we held, the Governor Mark Dayton showed up at the meeting, and he sat there and listened to see what's happening. The Islamophobia is real in our community, where children are confused, where they don't know what culture they belong to. Are they American? Are they the Somali community? Where terrorist organizations like ISIS in Syria have easier to recruit any child in his own bedroom, his own living rooms, and mothers are not aware of it. We partnered with Hennepin County Sheriff July 2016. Even though we were partnered with Hennepin County Sheriff since 2013, we were doing once a year what they call with Hennepin County Sheriff Stanek, coming forward, talking to the mothers, talking to the youth. What we learned last year was tremendous needed. We got it funded. That funded would help mothers to come forward to talk about any issues that they're facing when it comes to their children. Youth recruitment is real. And just talk about it. Like Deborah Hussein, who's a full-time advocate of the organization, she cannot be here today because she's the advocate of the day today. Deborah Hussein, it was one of those mothers who was in denial as well. She did not want to make sure, she did not want to hear that her son was recruited by ISIS. She was one of those mothers who was out there in the community talking about, this cannot happen to me, this cannot happen to anybody, this is a trap, it can be a trap by the law enforcement, and we cannot be out there and telling our children that's been recruited. Moving forward, I asked Deborah, I said, did you talk to your son? Did you really talk to him and ask him, is he really talked to ISIS? Did he really been recruited? She said, I don't know, but I will try to do that. After she met with her son, looking him in the eye and asked him the question, tell me the truth. Did you talk to ISIS? Were you in contact with people in Syria? And he said, yes. I was recruited. I have people who's in the other side of the world who emailing me every day, who are talking to them every day. And yes, I'm one of those people who's planning to go join ISIS and become a member of the ISIS and terrorist organization. That's when Deborah Hussein told her son, if you want me to be your mother, you must step up and you must tell the truth and plead guilty. It was hard. And Abdul Sab Wilson, as you all know, stepped up and he told the truth and he pleaded guilty and he said, I was recruited and yes, I was going to go fight for ISIS, including killing Americans. So for me, that was just the moment I realized how many mothers is in the community are not talking to us. There's many children in being picked it up. Please talk to your children. The law enforcement is not here to get you. We want to build this bridge to be partner. Working with Hennepin County Sheriff, we did a workshop on February 25th. Almost 100 mothers showed up. About 54 children showed up. You know what? We were overwhelmed because we didn't expect more than 30, 40 mothers to show up because people are in denial, remember? And then me and Julianne Ogman, who you heard earlier, who will partner this funding, who's going to end in June 2017, we did another workshop in March 4th where Sheriff Stanek, U.S. Attorney Andy Lugar, the FBI, Carol, a lot of people, law enforcement showed up in the room. Guess what? Another over 120 people, all of them 100% mothers showed up. We have videos, we have pictures to show up. And Sheriff Stanek, who supports greatly in our organization, sees this as an opportunity for us, not to be fear each other, the law enforcement not understanding what the community is going through, and the community not believing that the law enforcement is here to get your children, but this bridge has to be built, this bridge has to be closed. This funding will help to continue our work. This workshop is going to end in June, but what does that mean? I'm here today to ask you, this is just the beginning, seeing all this mother coming up, because you know what? When we started 4 years ago, all of these mothers coming up, all of these children showing up, all of this in denial is happening, all this recruitment is taking place. That's what I learned. Today I can sit in front of you and tell you, yes, it's real. ISIS is real. Recruitment is real. Terror is real. And my goal is to continue working with the law enforcement, and I'm grateful for the support of Hennepin County Sheriff Stanek. And I'm just here to say, please support this bill, because you know what? I want to advocate for the mothers and children.
Ms. Khalid, I'm not trying to be negative here, but you mentioned law enforcement, how they showed up, and you mentioned law enforcement, Sheriff Stanek, numerous times, but yet you want to cut law enforcement out of the bill. And also, I don't know if it's the best strategy to tell the kids just to watch out for violent people. Violent people can be a gang. I don't think you should diminish or minimize the word terrorism. I think that should be talked about. I think you should scare the heck out of these kids what they could face from a recruitment of terrorism. I don't like the term watered down. And then one other thing is there's a lot of programs you suggest here in your prevention strategies, but they have to do with music, art, theater, dance, play, bullying, domestic abuse, interfamily violence, culturally appropriate individual family counseling, focused on a communication, interpersonal relationships with the family. So the terms like that, we're wondering, where do we tip the scale? We don't want to finance a bunch of people playing basketball or teen centers if it isn't directly related to the reduction in recruitment of terrorism. So how far do we stretch the limits, and how many outreach programs we're going to go out to? And so that's just some of the concerns that I have.
And Mr. Chairman, thank you. I will say you are right, you are correct. I'm one of those people who's in the community, sees, because I'm on the ground. When you're on the ground and fighting, you see everything when you're out there, right? So I see mothers' need. I see when we did this workshop with the sheriff, and March 4th and February 25th, and we're going to be doing one in May, because I just want to remind you, May 26th will be Ramadan coming in early this year. We are moving forward to start our programs. What I see was children first time coming together with their mothers in the room. It's not only me, the sheriff also can testify that. That is what's missing in our community. When mothers knows when her children is during the day, she was there for 8 hours. But what about if the teenagers and the kids who showed up, they were somewhere else? They could have been right there in ISIS and recruiting room. So these programs you're talking about is part of for us just to directing them from the organization is a family service at the end of the day. So we will have these programs where mothers can sign up and have this program continue in law enforcement development with us where we're building this relationship. So when you say art, music, it's 13-year-old boy. You know what? This is not a girl. Girls are culturally shocked. She's been sex trafficked. You don't talk about it. Our community, we don't talk about a lot of things. We don't talk about domestic abuse. We don't talk about youth recruitment. We don't talk about all the things that's real, but we talk about behind the doors. So that's why I believe having them it's the other thing is about the mother. When she knows there's a program she can sign up for her son or her daughter, that's what is going to come in to help. The law enforcement is something that we built it, and I believe it's helping us tremendously where we understand the community should not be afraid of the law enforcement, because you know what? They might do something to help you, because if your son or your daughter was not picked up by the FBI, it would have been crossed over in series. And they would be first to be dead because they are recruited. And sometimes you are aware of it, some of the people who have been recruited in Minnesota, they already been killed. So my goal is to advocate to tell the mothers, We will work with the law enforcement, yes, but we also will have these programs where you can sign up. So the relationship has to cross the bridge where we need both sides, and we need that.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be really quick, being mindful of the time and our workload here. To the testifier, ma'am, thank you for your testimony. Two very brief questions. If you could just give me a short answer, that would be great. Number one, maybe to Representative Clark, is this new funding or is this continued funding for a program that already exists?
Continued.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Voice of East African Women is an existing organization that has some funding, but what we're doing here is expanding that funding and specifically for this intervention activities. And I just want to point out maybe in a little bit response to what the chairman mentioned too. If you look on page 2, line 2.26, we do include collaboration with numerous organizations, including law enforcement. That's not taken out. The only thing that's not in here, well, I can say that in the end, I guess, is we're supporting it being in another separate bill.
And Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then a very quick follow-up question then to the testifier. Are you a paid staff member or are you paid to work? Are you compensated for being involved in this program?
Ms. Glee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Neuberger. I'm the Executive Director of Voice of East African Women. I work daily directly with the mothers and the children.
So you are paid?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Considine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have an opportunity to have the mothers of the people that we are trying to prevent from being recruited help us. I can't imagine a better resource than that. And as to the components the chair was talking about, if you are going to integrate these people into our community, they have to have something to do. They have to feel like they are part of the community. There is no stronger deterrent for recruitment than to feel like they are involved, that they have something to lose. It's when they're sitting isolated in their rooms on the internet is when they're being recruited. So I believe the components that you're talking about are essential to make the program work. Thank you.
Any more questions from members? We don't really have time for more testimony. To give you like a few seconds, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to mention that this bill also will be included greater Minnesota. Like, we're going to be going in Register, Mankato, St. Cloud, Wilmer. All of those have been already in the middle of schedule and town hall meetings. We'll start after Ramadan and Mankato, and then we'll go to Register. We already been there in St. Cloud. So this will be the reason I was saying I'm on the ground every day, because it helped me learn what's happening dynamically with the Twin Cities, so this we can expand all around the state of Minnesota. It will not be over here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I don't have a big problem with the bill. We started out with anti-terrorism, but now we're integrating into the community and making people better citizens, and we're stretching it out into areas away from the original intention, but we're welding them in because we believe that will accomplish the final purpose. So it's just where that balance is what we're trying to find. Did you want to? Sure. Go ahead. You want to introduce yourself and begin.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Deputy Shane Murray with the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office. Just real quick, there's been a lot of talk about the Sheriff's Office here, and just for the record to reflect, we extremely value the partnership we've had with the Voices of East African Women in the past and in the future, but on this specific bill, the Sheriff's Office has not taken a position. Just wanted the record to reflect that.
And I'll just ask you a question. Does it cost the Sheriff's Department money when they show up at all these events and put time into them, yes or no?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Representative O'Neill, quickly.
Mr. Chair, I actually have a question for the testifier that just left from Hennepin County.
Okay. Deputy.
Chair. Just really quickly, I just wanted to hear, you know, in the amendment, we actually deleted a $500,000 appropriation for 2018, specifically the Commissioner of Public Safety for grants for local governments to identify populations that are at risk. And so would that have been money that you could have used had it stayed in and not been deleted out?
Deputy?
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, yes, but I think it goes a lot to House File 2068. It's the same language. It's all built around that grant from DPS, OJP, down to local law enforcement agencies. That's covered in House File 2068.
Thank you.
What's your official title? I shouldn't just call you Deputy.
Deputy Shane Myrie, and I do intergovernmental relations for the Sheriff's Office.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay. Any closing comments, Representative Clark? You got another bill up. And
yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate your having a chance to present this to you. And just, again, Representative O'Neill, as the Deputy Sheriff just pointed out, House File 2068, we support that. That's a separate bill, and it's a standalone bill for the funding that we've been discussing earlier, and that's why this is not in that language is not in this bill anymore. It's in that bill. Mr. Chairman and members, I just want to say this is quite a significant day for Fahil Khalif and for this effort. You heard earlier about issues that are going on with domestic violence and trafficking, and I just want to tell you that this honorable person today celebrates the opening of the very first in the whole country shelter for domestic violence and trafficking victims in the East African community. A soft opening, and I think you all have a chance to be invited to it too. So I just want you to know you have a person before you and an organization represented here that is of such high quality. It has reached into the depth of the families in a way that none other has happened, as far as I can tell. And particularly with the Youth Advisory Council that's in this bill, I think we can really look forward to some progress. And I just want to thank you for considering this legislation and working with us on it today. Thank you.
Fahil did a good job, and she's a friend of mine. So.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. And with that, we'll lay over House File 2017 for possible inclusion on the omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Clark.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Okay. Last bill, House File 1833, Representative Johnson. You can move your bill for possible inclusion once you get there.
Mr. Chair, members, I'd like to move House File 1833 for possible inclusion.
Okay, Representative Johnson, go ahead, sir.
Members, I presented this bill earlier this year in less than 3 minutes in the Transportation Committee. I'm going to see if I can do that as well today. Earlier in February, I was contacted by a sheriff's office who had a special response vehicle that was, they had their concerns because of the early weight restrictions being put on because of the warm February. The vehicle was overweight to be used on township roads. Now, in across Minnesota, the vast number of roads are township roads, and their concern was the last time they had used their special response vehicle, is an armor-plated vehicle used in special tactical needs. The vehicle was shot at and was hit multiple times while they were trying to approach the building that they were going to be going to, and it changed into a different type of situation. I've since talked to a couple other different departments that have armor-plated vehicles, and they too have also received and hit rounds while they're approaching the buildings. These vehicles are needed very badly for law enforcement safety and for the safety of our law enforcement officers. And while I was having the bill drafted up, I also contacted my ambulance service. And I asked him if what the weight limit was on ambulance. All of us remember the show, or most of us remember the show Emergency. Back then they had a fire truck, or a paramedics in a fire truck that went out to the scene, and a station wagon showed up to load the patient and haul him to the officer. Now the ambulances are basically it's an ER on wheels. They have a lot of equipment in there. And when I talked to my ambulance director, he told me, officially, we're just under the weight limit. Unofficially, we're way over. We do these vehicles to get to the people's houses. It's important that we get there. Is law enforcement going to stop anybody from an ambulance from going to a house? Absolutely not. But the situation is, if they're responding and they end up being in some type of motor vehicle accident, whether it's their fault or not, if there's serious injury and reconstruction is done, which more than likely will be, that's where it's going to come into play, and the ambulance is going to be held liable for any injuries, whether it was their fault or not, because they were not supposed to be on that road. And this bill deals the same way as fire trucks, which are already exempt on these roads, allows them to respond when needed. I have talked to the counties and the Minnesota Association of Townships, and they have no problem with this bill.
Hey, Representative Johnson, I think Representative Neuberger might have been thinking the same thing as I did, that the ambulance are going to have an eject button if they say MnDOT coming with the scales to just get underweight real quick. I thought that would be funnier. Representative McKean, followed by Representative Hilster.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Johnson. I think this is a relatively good bill. I think it does what it needs to do. I begin to get a little bit concerned on the damage that may be caused on some of these roads by the added weight during what's such a critical time. And the reason that I'm bringing that up, I'd really love to see a transportation bill that serves the whole state of Minnesota. And I think that this is a type of bill that points to the fact that we need to have a transportation bill.
Okay, Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Johnson. I'm looking at lines 2.6, that's subdivision E. It says that it doesn't apply to vehicles operated under terms of a special permit issued as provided by law. Is there anyone else other than law enforcement or emergency vehicles that can get a special permit under this law?
Well, I'm not aware of any. I had not noticed that. I'm glad you brought that up. When I went up to the revisor's office, they were trying to clean up the statutes because they had a tough time trying to find where the fire department apparatus were exempted. So they were just trying to clarify the statute. And then, you know, I'm not sure if there is any other types when that's going on, because in road construction or anything else like that, they get their equipment to the scene or to the area before those road restrictions come in.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just Representative Johnson, between now and the time we see this bill again, you may just want to find out if there is anyone that you don't intend to be exempted from this under that special permit.
I will do that.
Thank you.
Okay. No other questions? Any questions from the public? Seeing none. Representative Johnson, you want to move your own bill for possible inclusion?
I will renew my motion to have this bill included for possible inclusion.
Okay. With that, I think we're adjourned, aren't we?